Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
All right. Get my instrument correct here. Yes, it's all. I'm looking at the levels. They are bouncing, which is nice. Okay. Reggie in the booth, thumbs up, sandwich down. We'll have to do this at another time when you don't eat, if there is such a time. I'm just joking. Come on. This is an atmosphere of always of positive reinforcement. You know, I am always glass full. All right, here we go. Let's do this. Three S's, star, smile, and strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNPlus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted for your podcasting pleasure, offering you a binge-worthy buffet of information, opinion, entertainment. All jammed into an hour or so every week. All we ask for is 1 hour of the 168 hours that you are given every week. That's not too much to ask, is it? I give my hour to you. Can't you give it back? If you like this hour, then go to WGNPlus.com, go to the entertainment section, and you will see a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you will see 157, or no, 156 previous hours there for you to enjoy, which means that this is episode 157. And most likely, I believe this could be the third anniversary of the podcast. I know I started in May. You do 152, if you do 52 times 3, that's 156. So we are now into, and I don't know when it exactly premiered the date. So either last podcast or this one is the third anniversary. 157 and counting. So thank you for your loyalty. Thank you for downloading or scrolling or clicking or whatever it is that you do to find us on a weekly basis. Hopefully you find this hour worth your time. I certainly enjoy doing it, so I hope that you enjoy listening to it. Considering what the podcast is called and considering who I am, I think today is probably the most appropriate podcast, or one of the most appropriate podcasts that we've ever done. I am Elton Jim Toronto. I have been a fan of Elton John for more than 46 years. As a little kid, back in the 70s, when Elton John was the most popular entertainer in the world, and that's not debatable, I became a fan and have continued to be a fan for what, more than two-thirds of my life? It's been a big chunk, let's put it that way. I can barely remember when I wasn't an Elton John fan. I do remember when I wasn't, but it's sketchy. And so this podcast is titled Captain Podtastic, which once again is a reference to Elton John, even though, as you know, if you listen on a regular basis, I don't talk about Elton John all the time. But I thought that coming off of my nickname and known on the radio as Elton Jim, that if I was going to put a podcast together, I should have maybe a little Elton reference. So Captain Podtastic is a reference to Elton John's album, Captain Fantastic. So with all those connections there, both personally as well as professionally, it only seems fitting that this podcast would be dedicated to talking about analyzing, reviewing, critiquing, whatever you want to talk about, whatever you want to call it, a new film that is going to be coming out in a couple of weeks, called, fittingly, Rocket Man. It is the biography of Elton John, finally coming to the big screen. It was written several years ago. The project was floating around in Hollywood. Several people were connected to it, different directors, different stars. Tom Hardy, most prominently, was the first choice to play Elton John, and he was signed into it. But then the project wasn't getting produced, and he's a very busy actor. And then there was a question about his ability to sing. If you saw Bohemian Rhapsody, which won an Academy Award for the lead actor, Rami Malek, he lip-synced as Freddie Mercury. But the creators of this movie, and especially the producers, being Elton John himself and his husband David Furnish, and the creative team, they felt that they wanted an actor who could sing on their own and not lip-sync Elton's vocals, but actually sing on their own and interpret, sound enough like Elton, but at the same time, interpret the songs to give it more of a real feel. The entire goal of this film was to be very honest and real and authentic and tell this story in the most real terms that you could, in the most honest terms, and as Elton put it, all warts and all of his storybook and his storybook life. And when you say storybook, it's not necessarily all good. This is a very tough film to watch at times. It is in many ways a fairy tale in as you see it unfold and what happened and the success and the fame that came from it. But you also see that it was not all a golden paved brick road, if you will. Some of the yellow on that brick road was paled and stained along the way. But I did want to review it as one of the first, I guess, because while it does come to theaters on May 31st, which will be in about a little less than 2 weeks from when this podcast is posted, I was able to see an advanced screening of it. It was offered to the public. No big, no special privileges here. It was all around the country, I guess, to create and provide some advanced buzz. There was a special public advanced screening all around the country, and so of course I went to see it, given that opportunity. And so I was going to wait to talk about this, but my enthusiasm for the movie, and in today's world, everybody leaks theories and why wait? You know, that's today's world. The PR man in me said, well, let's wait till the movie comes out and everybody gets a chance to see it. But I guess the reality of the world right now is that, you know, nobody waits for anything. When you've got information, people share it. And so, yes, if I can be a vehicle to help, provide a buzz about this and give people a little advance information about what the movie is about and if it's good or bad and create some excitement to see if you want to see it, then why not? So I've altered my plans, and I decided to come out and hopefully be one of the first. The film did show publicly before this screening at the Cannes Film Festival. So the world has seen it. The reviews are out there. You can certainly read them out on the internet. But I thought that given my my fandom, whatever you want to call it, for Elton John, that it would only seem fitting that I talk about this film as soon as I can. And I don't know how much you know about my background. I have shared a lot of it. But in the early part of my career, I was a movie reviewer. I've been an entertainment writer for more than 30 years, back to when I was in college. I was writing a music column back when I was, a junior in college. I was maybe 20 or 21. I was already had my byline in a local newspaper out here and a weekly music column. And then from that, I started to write movie and music reviews. I wound up being a movie columnist for a monthly publication. I became a freelance writer. I've had stories appear in many publications, national as well as in the local newspapers here in Chicago, like the Chicago Tribune and national magazines. And I actually was the managing editor and writer for a national movie magazine called Inside Hollywood back in the late 80s and early 90s, and wrote about, you know, videos and things like that as well for other magazines. So I certainly have some experience in being a reviewer. And this is kind of an interesting and fun and long-awaited opportunity to talk about one movie and one story that I know pretty well. I may know Elton John's story almost as well as he does. As I said, for more than 45 years, I've been reading every book, reading every article, seeing every documentary about his life. And so I know the facts pretty well. And so certainly when the idea, and I've said for many years that, oh my gosh, I mean, the story is made to be a film, to be a story, to be told. And it does unravel in almost, as I said before, fairy tale and storybook manner. But at the same time, as in everything in life, nothing is so perfect. And so what's really interesting about Elton John's story is not just the fame and the fortune and the success and this kind of storybook telling, but in the midst of it, like so many of these kind of biographies, you do find as much success and fame that people attain, at many times they attain just as much trouble and pain and difficulty, and Elton John's story certainly has that. What is nice about his story is that it doesn't end tragically. It's not only is it still going on, but there is a moment of important redemption. And so here we have him at age 72, still going strong, still standing, if you will, out in the midst of a farewell tour that is among the most successful in terms of box office receipts, playing right now, and in fact just won the Billboard Magazine Award for the Rock Tour of the Year for 2018. So for a 72-year-old guy, not too bad. Still standing, yes, no doubt about that. But this movie is one, as I said, that many fans have been waiting for 40 years to see. Because his career has been has had so many, and his life has had so many interesting twists and turns. As I said, the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. His flamboyance in terms of visually certainly makes a movie about him a natural, as well as some of the dramas that have happened to him and which he has done to himself. So I was very excited to see it. It is called Rocket Man. Should say right off the bat that you'll notice that the title, and this is some of the insights that I can provide you as an Elton fan. You'll notice that the title, when you see it publicized on television or in newspapers or magazines or at the theaters, you'll notice that the word is one word. It says Rocket Man. There's no space. It's not Rocket Man. The original song, the Elton John song, Rocket Man, from 1972, which was on his Honky Chateau album, is two words. And you would say, well, why isn't the movie the same, you know, spelled the same way as the title? And as a longtime fan and as a, you know, somewhat persnickety, detail-oriented person, it does bug me to some extent. But that's where the legal things come in. You may recall that back about 20 years or so ago, there was a comedy. It wasn't a very good movie. It came and went, but it did come out, and it was called Rocket Man. but it was about an astronaut, a, you know, it was a goofy astronaut, but it was a guy that gets sent up to space. I don't even remember the, it wasn't even worth the knowing the plot. It came and went, but it was called Rocket Man. So there was a film already out there with that title and with that spelling, with the space, Rocket Space Man. So for copyright purposes, the producers of this one, even though Elton had every right to do it because it was his song and the phrase from his song, which his lyricist Bernie Taupin wrote, but they waited too long, I guess. Someone copped the title for a film, even though you can, it's a song title. Since it's a movie title, they were able to use that and not worry about copyrights because they went from one kind of a art form, song, to a movie. So they didn't have to worry about that. But when Elton's making a movie about it, now you've got another movie with that name, Rocket Man. And so there were copyright issues. So there you go. Little tidbit, little fun fact. But let's get to the film, Rocket Man. So it's fitting that you, it's called Rocket Man. To be honest with you, once again, as a fan, I would have preferred it be called Captain Fantastic. Because to me, that, if you know that, and I named my podcast after it, Captain Podtastic, but Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy was an autobiographical album about Elton John and his lyricist Bernie Taupin. Elton John was Captain Fantastic, which makes sense. He was bigger than life. He was flamboyant. He was fantastic in all ways. And Bernie Taupin, his lyricist, was from the north of England, from a rural area, who loved Americana and the United States and its Old West lore. And so he felt like a cowboy, always wanted to be a cowboy, and he came from a rural area, so he dubbed himself the Brown Dirt Cowboy. And so it seems that that would have been the most fitting title. But here we go again. If you remember, just about 2 years ago, there was a film called Captain Fantastic. It had nothing to do with Elton John at all. I think Viggo Mortensen was in it. But it was called Captain Fantastic, and it was about a man who was a father, and they obviously, whoever wrote the film was a fan of Elton John's or heard the title and thought, well, that's kind of an interesting title to put to my story, even though it had nothing to do with music or Elton John. So there was that title already out, and it was so soon that I'm sure they couldn't use it. So they went for while Captain Fantastic is well known, most average casual fans know of the song Rocket Man. It is one of Elton John's greatest hits by far. So from a marketing standpoint, it made sense. But I thought, you know, from a storytelling standpoint, and I have a little affinity for Captain Fantastic myself, but it is what it is. But ironically, as I will tell you, discussion, the song Rocket Man is not really prominently featured, which is interesting. There's 20 songs, 20 Elton John, Bernie Taupin songs in this film. And some of them are played throughout, you know, from beginning to end. And some are just played in snippets. And Rocket Man certainly is featured, but it is not the most prominently featured song. It doesn't even play over the credits at the end as some kind of closure to that. But as I said, from a marketing standpoint and certainly from a recognition standpoint, Rocket Man does fit. And it does fit the story in a way in terms of his ascent, his upward and amazing, ascent into stardom. So there are connections. So what's interesting is this story and this script has been floating around for many years. It was written by Lee Hall, who wrote the book for Billy Elliot on Broadway, you know, the musical. And I believe he may have also, I think he wrote the movie Billy Elliot. So Elton had worked with Lee Hall in the past, and he was very intent, as I said, on making this not just a whitewashed kind of homage to himself, but he wanted people to hear and see his whole story and show him not in the most of flattering terms. He wanted to tell his story, warts and all, and it's very brave. We all know we have secrets. We all know that we try to put our best foot forward. In our normal lives, there's things that we've never told people. Even our most, you know, our closest loved ones, we haven't told. So for Elton to say, I want to put it all out there on a giant movie screen for the whole world to see, it's pretty gutsy. And he even opened up all of his personal diaries to this writer, Lee Hall, to gather as much information as he wanted, personally as well as professionally. And Elton has been keeping diaries and keeping books about his life and career from a very young age. It's almost as if he knew that someday he would be the superstar that he was. But from an early age, he kept a diary. And even when he became famous, even to this day, he has notebooks filled with notations of where his songs are on the charts and in what countries and what songs did well in what countries and how long they were on the charts. He's very in tune. He's been a music fan since a young kid, and he followed all of his favorite stars in that way. And so it only makes sense that when he became a musician, that kind of obsession, that kind of part of his mind and part of his personality would do that for himself. So he's got very detailed records about himself in terms of not only his career, but as I said, personal things that have happened in his life. And so that was all up for grabs. And, you know, this is a story, and Elton John has been now in the public eye since he was 22 years old. So, or 23. So we're at the 50-year mark almost. In 1970s, when he really became a huge star right here in the United States, while he had recorded a couple of one album and had been recording around in England in the late 60s, he didn't really make any impact at all. There was some things written about him, and people talked about his live performances, but he was certainly not a star. And don't forget, in 1968 and 69, when he was coming up, the Beatles were still around. A lot of people don't think of Elton John as a contemporary of the Beatles, but he was. His album came out in 1969. The Beatles broke up in 1970. So he was a contemporary of the Beatles. But it wasn't until he came to the United States in 1970 in August and played an amazing stand at a very influential and hip club in West Hollywood called the Troubadour, where many people of the day used to hang out as well as play. And people like Carole King and James Taylor and Neil Young and Joni Mitchell and the Eagles got together. Glenn Frey met Don Henley at the Troubadour. They used to hang out there. They used to play as a backup band for Linda Ronstadt, who was just beginning. They used to eat right down the street, which is still there, at a steakhouse called Dan Tana's. So this club was very influential, very hip at the time. And that's where the story, more or less, you know, in terms of him becoming Elton John, begins. But what's really intriguing about Elton's story and this film is his early years. And some people may not know that. A lot of people know about the Troubadour. He played there on opening night. He got rave reviews for his performance. And a journalist named Robert Hilburn of the Los Angeles Times raved about this play, or about his performance. And literally overnight, when you talk about overnight sensations, Elton John was, and Elton was an overnight sensation. Because of that performance and because of that review, it was picked up by newspapers all around the country. And basically it said, you know, in the wake of the Beatles breakup, because Elton was performing in August and the the Beatles broke up in April of that year, the headline was something like, don't worry, actually said something like, rejoice, rock music fans, there is a new superstar, and his name is Elton John. Because there was this kind of question, what now the Beatles are gone. They kind of started the music revolution in 1964, again, the British invasion, and really changed the culture. While Elvis certainly was a forerunner of that in the 50s, the Beatles cemented it, and rock and roll was now a part of the culture, and there was the whole hippie culture there, and the baby boomers embraced rock and roll, and this was not going to go away. And so this was when the Beatles broke up, that was a monumental, you know, shift in the culture of the young people. And so as music critics and music fans were wondering when the Beatles were gone, well, now what? And this review by Robert Hilburn certainly helped propel Elton John immediately. He went from an unknown to a superstar literally overnight. But Elton's story is important in his early years. What many people don't know is that he really is a musical prodigy. And, you know, when you think of Elton John, you think of flamboyance, you think of the costumes, you think of the glasses, you think of the kicking the stool. You know, there's so many big and, as I said before, flamboyant and over-the-top types to his personal personality. But when stripped of all that, he is a musical genius, and that's not just coming from a fan of his. That's a fact. He was a musical prodigy. At age 3 or 4, he heard the Skater's Waltz on the radio and sat down at the piano and just naturally picked it out, much to the amazement of his parents. He was just able to sit down at a piano, having never played before, and pick out that tune. And right away, his parents and his mom said, well, wait a minute, there's something here. There's some talent here. And he wound up getting lessons. And at age 11, he got a scholarship to the Royal Academy of Music in London. He was born in a very small suburb of London, working class, didn't come from privilege at all. They weren't poor, but they weren't rich, working class, middle class. But suddenly, at age 11, he was at the Royal Academy of Music, where some of the most talented and gifted students, much older than him, were enrolled. He was like young Sheldon. And his talent was immediately recognized by these very well-established musical people. There was no question that this little boy had amazing musical talent. And I can attest to that because, as I've said, I think, on this podcast many times, I've seen Elton John 100 and counting, 192 times. So I've certainly seen him play live. I've seen his talent, you know, in person and in action. But the most, I guess, shocking and amazing and just impressive was when I would see him perform in Las Vegas during his residency at the Caesar's Palace. During his most recent residency, the Million Dollar Piano Tour, there was a point in the show, if you sat in the couple in the first 2 or 3 rows, during one of the last songs of the show, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, they would let you go up to the top, or let you go on the stage and stand right next to him, right next to the piano, while he was playing that song on the stage. And if you were quick enough and you knew when this was going to happen, you can get right next to him. Physically right next to him. I many times was 6 inches away from him, right next to the piano, right next to where he was sitting. And I would watch his hands. I always watch his hands, but right there, I mean, I was right next to his hands. And I'm watching those hands on that piano, and he's singing, don't forget, at the same time. He's looking out at the crowd. It's almost as if he's not paying attention to his hands. Those hands just know exactly where to go on that keyboard. It is innate. It is inbred. It is inborn in him. It is a natural gift. It is many ways like they talk about with Mozart. where Mozart was a little kid and was paraded around Europe because he was such a prodigy. That you can see that there, Elton John, just I don't think he even thinks. I just think his hands immediately sit down and just play. They're playing before he's thinking. It is clearly, a natural talent. And so what you get to see is that part of the story at the beginning of this film, Rocket Man, which many people may not be aware of. And as with many people that rise to that kind of fame, many times they are driven by demons, inner demons as well as outer demons. And in Elton's story, there are a couple of demons that drove him psychologically as well as personally to prove and to do what he wanted to do and to rebel. He had a very difficult relationship with his father, Stanley Dwight. You should know Elton John's real name is Reginald Kenneth Dwight, born on March 25th, 1947. Literally a baby boomer. I mean, born right after World War II. That's what a baby boomer really is, folks. So he's really a baby boomer, born right after the war. And but his father was a very regimented man. And as most as we can tell, I'm not sure if I don't know if Elton's conception was a mistake or not, if his parents married because back in those days, in quotes, they had to, that they got pregnant before they were married. But certainly, it seems as if the marriage was not a happy marriage from the get-go. And maybe both his father and mother felt a little trapped. But clearly his father was a very strict man, was not very, at least to Elton, was not very affectionate, and many times was not even home. He was in the Royal military, and so it was a very difficult home for Elton, young Reg, to grow up in. And his mother certainly was not happy as well, and it was very clear. So there were a lot of motivating factors, and you get to see that, and it's not a pretty sight. And there are times where you will wince when you see that, and the way he was treated, and that's the one thing about this film, and as I said about this story, Elton's story is a 10,000 piece jigsaw puzzle. There's so much that goes on from the beginning, from his early days as a young child, to where he is today, 72 years later. It's a 10,000 piece jigsaw puzzle. And the credit to this film is how they put all those jigsaw puzzle pieces, the individual pieces, together and made it coherent and made it entertaining and made it informative and made it dramatic and made it fun and made it sad and made it powerful, and put in and got in most of the important events. It's quite an accomplishment when you look at the subject matter. So we see Elton's early life. We see his, in this film, it's portrayed with a lot of, powerful emotion. And sometimes, as I said, I laughed at this film. I cried at this film. I winced at this film. I tapped my toes at this film. Mostly, though, I nodded during this film, because as a fan and as someone who knows this story, I nodded quite a bit to say, well, they nailed that part. Yes. Oh, they put that in. They got that in. Good. Yep. Okay. That's there. Because I know this story. I've been reading about it for majority of my life. And that's what every good film does, is make you react in some way. It emotionally touches you. And so at the very least, I don't think you have to be a diehard Elton John fan to see this. I think as a credit to everybody, Dexter Fletcher, who is the director, as well as the producers, Elton and his husband David Furnish and others, the cast a newcomer, relatively, named Taron Egerton, who plays Elton. And there's some other people, mostly English actors. Richard Madden, who you may know from Game of Thrones, plays his manager and former lover, John Reed. Jamie Bell plays Bernie Taupin, who writes all the lyrics and is Elton's brother that he never had. And Bryce Dallas Howard, Ron Howard's daughter, plays Elton's mother. Everybody really did an amazing job in bringing this story to life and bringing these characters to life to bring out and to convey, as I said before, not only the highs of this story, but the lows. And I'm giving you a little background on the story just so you understand as to, well, why this movie? Anyway, why make a movie? Okay, you know, Elton John is Elton John. There's a lot of popular performers out there. Why do we have to see Elton John's story? Well, as I said, I wanted to give you a little background because it is an interesting story on its own just to read about, which I have done for most of my life. But and once again, I'm trying to maybe gauge, you know, get, you know, create some interest on yours to go see this film, even if you're not an Elton John fan. There's an interesting story here to be told. If you just like good stories, if you're just a fan of movies, you like to see a film that entertains you and touches you and moves you and makes you happy and makes you sad, that's this story, that's this movie. If you're an Elton John fan, you're going to go see this. I know that. So sort of talking to those of you out there who go, well, what's the big deal or why should I see that? So I'm letting you know, there's an interesting story here to be told. And so we get that early life. And one thing about this film you should know right from the get-go, and you are, as an audience member, you are challenged to accept this narrative. This is not a factual-based linear story about here's how things happen. Certainly there's a flow to it, and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. But a lot of events that happen do not happen exactly the way they happened. They do not exactly happen in the time frame that they happen. This is billed as a fantasy because the idea is that Elton's life has been a fantasy. And Elton is the narrator. Elton's character is the narrator in the story. And so you can also look at it from a creative standpoint, is that he is relating this story. And so maybe his memory of exact times and events are a little clouded because of his drug use and things like that. And so that's why you may look at this film and say, well, it's hard to follow at times. What year is this? Or that song wasn't out at that time, or that couldn't have happened then. You know, it's not really a literal, you know, moment by moment, day by day, chronological story. And at the very beginning, you are asked as the audience to accept that kind of storytelling. In many ways, this is a musical. I know it's called a biography, a biopic, as everybody calls things now, but it really is a musical. There are full-blown dance numbers. All the music is Elton John's music, but there are full-blown dance numbers like you would see in West Side Story or American in Paris or Mamma Mia or any kind of Broadway or movie musical. This is a movie musical. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere down the line this Rocket Man story, this movie, is turned into a Broadway show, which happens every day now. We're seeing movies turned into Broadway shows. In fact, one of the popular ones right now on Broadway is Tootsie, based on the Dustin Hoffman film from the 80s. And that's been going on for several years now. We've got Footloose and a whole bunch of movies that were popular that are being turned into Broadway shows. And I would not be surprised if this becomes a Broadway show someday, because they wouldn't have to change anything. It's there. It is a musical. It's a Broadway show in many ways. There are sequences that are sung, and there are sequences that are played out dramatically. And so right from the beginning, you are asked to accept that kind of storytelling. And I think that's, it, once again, that's a very bold and brave thing to do. Because most people, when they see a biography, whether it's going back to Lou Gehrig's Pride of the Yankees with Gary Cooper, or, you know, any kind of biography, we think that, and we're used to seeing these stories told, we think, in a very factual way. This one, from the outset, says, there's going to be information here. There's going to be real life events. These did happen. But they may not have happened exactly in this way, exactly at this time, but they did happen. And once again, in terms of writing this script and putting all these 10,000 puzzle pieces together, once again, bravo to the screenwriter, Lee Hall, for putting all this together. And bravo for the creative team and the director and for Elton to say, yes, do it this way, to take that course, because it would have been very easy to tell a straight story, and it may have been more easy for the audience to accept it and understand it. So I always think, when you go to see a movie, I look at movies as entertainment, yes, but also as an art form. And I like to be challenged by a film. And so once again, that was another thing that was interesting from my standpoint, because I'm watching this, and many times I know what happened, and I'm like, oh, well, that didn't happen then, or that didn't happen that way. So they've taken creative liberties, and there's nothing wrong with that, because what they're going for is the emotion. They're going for the message. They're not necessarily worried about historic accuracy. They're worried about emotional power, emotional conveyance, to make you feel this story, to make you understand and be a part of that story. So once again, I think from a an audience standpoint, that's fun. That's cool. So hopefully, if, once again, you're not an Elton John fan, you still might be drawn to this film anyway. It's rated R. You should know that. It shows a lot of disturbing moments of drug taking and alcohol. There's orgy scenes. They're not graphic. But, I mean, he don't forget, he became a star in the, you know, at the height of his fame in the mid-70s when the rock and roll lifestyle was being defined. That's when he was living the rock and roll lifestyle, when it was given a name, the rock and roll lifestyle, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And that was what happened, especially to somebody in his strata, in his sphere of fame. So you do see the drug use. We do see the alcoholism. You do see the promiscuous sex everywhere. And even in Elton John's position, somewhat controversial, although I don't know how much in today's world, but you do see, you know, his homosexuality and how he struggled with it, not maybe so much internally, but maybe because of the stigmas of the day. You know, a lot of people think, oh, it's always been accepting. Homosexuality has been a taboo in human existence since day one. And in the 70s, while many people may have been practicing homosexuality, it was still not out in the open like it is today. And if somebody of Elton John's fame, could be career suicide at that time to admit it or to be known. So he had to struggle with that, as well as his own stigma of it, of his own upbringing. Perhaps of his parents and his mother's reluctance to accept it. They were from another generation, another time, when that wasn't the right thing to do, and people thought that homosexuality was something that you learned. So there was a lot of conflicting emotions going on in Elton's life. His relationship with his father and his parents, this burning drive and ambition, this amazing musical talent bubbling in him, this uncertainty about sex and his sexuality, a lot of things going on here. In the meantime, he's this amazing performer and amazing songwriter that achieves success that in many ways equaled or eclipsed people like Elvis and the Beatles, his idols. He stands toe-to-toe with them in terms of record sales and things like that. So you've got, as I said before, this very complex story being told, and it's in many ways it is contradictory. And you say to yourself, my gosh, you're the biggest star on earth. Why isn't this happy? And that's the one thread that I've always noticed in Elton John's story. If you listen to the album Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy from 1975, as I said, Bernie Taupin, who writes the lyrics to most of Elton's songs, he told their story about how they both got started. Each song is a little piece of their story up until the recording of their first album in 1969. So when they met in 1967 till when they put their first album out in 1969, those 2 years of when they met, they got to know each other, they started to discover their writing talents as a team, and then the struggle that they went through to be noticed and to have people not want their music and to be rejecting them and them to, you know, find their own way and to finally make that album and begin their career. And that's the one thread I've always noticed in Elton's story, is that it's always been seemingly a struggle, despite outwardly all of this fame and fortune. Sadly, I don't know how much happiness there has been. There has been moments of happiness, but it seems that it's mostly been a very difficult life, despite all the trappings of fame. He's one of the richest people in the world. An extravagant lifestyle, a luxurious lifestyle, a lifestyle that anybody would kill for in terms of financial means and the ability to do anything you want. And at the same time, it's been a very sad life for the most part. Thankfully, and what this movie sort of hinges on is in 1990, when he, at the height of his drug use and alcoholism and bulimia, just finally said, I need help. And that's what he has said the meaning of this movie is, really, to come forward and say, I need help and change your life. And he did. He came actually to Chicago to the Parkside Center at the Lutheran General Hospital here and went into their program, and he became sober. And that's now almost 30 years ago. And his life did change for the better, not only personally but professionally. He had a renaissance in his career in the 90s, 3 or 4 years after that, where he did the music for The Lion King and opened himself up to a whole new audience of young kids who were hearing his music in an animated film, The Lion King, which is one of the most successful entertainment projects in the history of entertainment, with the film as well as the Broadway show. He won an Oscar for the song from that film, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? So he had now he's married. He's got 2 children. So his life, while it's still complex, there's no question, he's not cured of everything, but at least he's going through life with clear eyes and a clear head. But yes, his life has changed for the better since he went sober and got rid of it, or at least didn't get rid of. I don't think you ever get rid of the demons in your life, but hopefully you're able to at least deal with them and put them in a place and move past them. They'll always be haunting you. And that's what this really, the heart of this story is, and that is shown in the film. But I don't want to say that it's a downer film, because it isn't. There are a lot of difficult moments. As I said, it's a very complex and diverse film. There are moments of high energy and excitement, and you're smiling and tapping your foot, because once again, some of the greatest songs that Elton John and Bernie Taupin have written are there, and they are presented in exciting ways. And I don't want to ruin a lot of it for you. And as I said, many of the things didn't happen the way they are portrayed necessarily, but there are some amazing musical sequences visually, with all of his different costumes that he's had in his career. And the flamboyance of that is there. There's some ironic humor. There's some dark humor. Really what this movie is about as well, at the core of it, not only is his redemption, his own ability to change his life, but at the core of it really is the relationship between Elton John and Bernie Taupin. And we see how they got together. It is a star-crossed story. It really is one. It is a fair. That is a fairy tale. You know, literally, there was no reason that Elton John and Bernie Taupin ever should have met. They lived miles and miles away. They had nothing in common personally. They were born and raised in completely different environments. Physically, they were far away from one another. But as fate plays a role so often, they both answered an ad in a music magazine for writers and musicians. Bernie Taupin was only 17 years old. Elton was 20, but Bernie was 17. Just, I don't even know if he was done with high school yet. If he was, just barely. And he submitted a bunch of poems or lyrics to this ad, and Elton said, well, I can't write lyrics, but I can write music. And there was a guy named Ray Williams who put this ad in and worked for a record company, and he gave Elton this envelope of lyrics just almost on a lark. He said, well, see what you can do with these since you can't write lyrics. Here's a guy who can write lyrics but doesn't write music. That's how they got together. That's how one of the greatest songwriting teams got together. Almost on a lark. As I said before, it's an amazing story. And that is the heart of it. Not only how they get together, but how they become not only friends, but really brothers. Bernie Taupin becomes the brother that Elton never had. And while they have a love for each other, it was never a romantic love. I'm sure Elton had a crush on Bernie Taupin. But Bernie Taupin made it very clear at the outset that that was not, you know, his orientation. And Elton accepted that. But they continued because I think they realized they had that this wasn't just, you know, some crush on. They had some real bonding moments of music itself. And then this talent that they had together as a songwriting team. And they have been together. There was a brief time when they didn't write, but for the most part, the greatest hits, all those songs that you know so well, were written by Bernie Taupin. And his role in this film, and I've actually joked, he is Saint Bernard in this movie. Because in this film, he is kind of the voice of reason for Elton. As Elton goes on so many of his highs and lows, Bernie seems to be a very constant force. Because don't forget, that's a very interesting relationship, and there's a dichotomy there because Bernie writes the lyrics on his own, gives them to Elton. Elton takes them and writes the music on his own. So they're never really together. They don't really collaborate per se. One delivers the lyrics and Elton reacts to those lyrics and writes songs. Then off he goes to record them and perform them. Bernie's role in the songs really end. It begins with Bernie's, but then it ends once he hands those over to Elton. Elton takes those songs, turns them into music, and then records them and then performs them. So he gives birth to those things, and then Elton is kind of the father of those songs. He's the one that brings those out into the world and records them and exposes them to the public. Bernie is kind of at the beginning, but then he doesn't really see those songs through. So, you know, you see that Bernie's role is kind of interesting. He is able to be a little objective because he's not in the recording studio all the time. He's not on stage. He's not on the road. He was on the road with Elton early in his career just because they were in this together and they did have this kind of bond. But, you know, there came a point at 8 o'clock where Elton went out on stage and Bernie just was backstage. So he did have a unique view. He was both involved in this. He played a pivotal role. Elton John has said many times, there would be no without Elton John without Bernie Taupin. So Elton, Bernie Taupin is a key talent and part of this story, especially from their musical career. It starts with Bernie, but it ends with Elton. And that's very unique in the rock world. Most of the times they're written by musicians, and even, you know, McCartney and Lennon, they wrote the songs together, but they perform them together. In this case, Bernie doesn't perform them. He hands them off, and they take on a world of their own. But the person who stewards those songs out into the world is Elton. They are his songs. To the world, they are Elton John's songs. So Bernie Taupin plays an important role, and it sadly, for the public, is not as well known. So this one thing about this movie that I'm happy about, because I've always been an Elton, a Bernie Taupin fan, and I'm one of the few people, I listen to when I first get an album, I look at the lyrics first. I don't necessarily listen to the music. I'm more literary in that way. Bernie Taupin has played a role in my development as a writer. I think about how he wrote and how he describes things. So I'm glad that Bernie Taupin is getting in this film for a mass audience. He's finally, almost 50 years later, finally, hopefully, going to get the due that he deserves, because he is an integral part of the Elton John story and an integral part of the Elton John career. And many times he has either been forgotten or unknown by the masses. And his role in being a friend and a quasi-brother to Elton, I don't know if many people knew that as well. So if you're really looking for the unknown part of this story that really jumps out at you, it's the role of Bernie Taupin. He's certainly not the star of the movie, but he certainly has an elevated place in that story, thankfully. Those of us who know the story know of Bernie's importance. And now hopefully the rest of the world will know. And the actor Jamie Bell, who plays him, does a very good job. And I have to say, Taron Egerton as Elton John in this film, Rocket Man, does an amazing job of, they've done a great job of putting on a look. They got the gap tooth in the front of Elton's look, and the hair, or lack thereof, as time goes on. But he really does a great job, as once again, somebody who has observed Elton, and I know all of his physical quirks and his gestures, the whole thing, believe me. If you've seen somebody 192 times in concert and you've followed them for 45 years, you know this person. And I was really, there were some times I was watching the screen where I forgot it wasn't Elton. That's how convincing he was. He doesn't do an impersonation. He doesn't mimic. He's not like Jamie Foxx, who won the Academy Award for Ray Charles. He did an impersonation of Ray Charles. It was an amazing performance. And he did his voice and everything, and it was great. Taron Egerton does not mimic Elton John's voice, but he does capture his spirit, and he does capture his physicality. And you would think it's crazy, but amidst it all, this flamboyant character, Elton John is very shy. He's a very shy person in private, and he's still very insecure. He's always felt like he never was a part of the cool group. He doesn't realize, and that's the irony. You know, he is the cool group. People wanted to be around him. He was Elton John, but he never felt that way. He always wanted to be accepted. And that is a driving force. His father was a driving force who sort of put him down and didn't think that he could have a career. So his father was a driving force in him trying to prove his father wrong. But he's also been battling an inner insecurity his whole life that maybe stems from his childhood, of not being in the in crowd. He was kind of chubby. He wasn't very good looking in the classic sense. He always felt a little bit out of the crowd. And once again, that is many times a motivating factor for people who go on to amazing fame, because they have that inner drive to be accepted. And even in this day, 72 years old and 50 years later, he still has that drive and still has that need to want to be accepted. So this movie is very, it's 2 hours long, and I'll tell you, they jammed so much into this movie. Visually, they have done an excellent job of recreating the different eras. Musically, they've done a great job. Giles Martin, the son of George Martin, who produced the Beatles, the producer of all the music. The music sounds great. Taron Egerton performs and sings. I mean, he sings. That doesn't play the piano. But sings all the songs on his own. No lip syncing. The costumes, they are not directly copies of some of his most well-known costumes, but they are all influenced by them. So you still get the craziness and the flamboyance of them, and you will recognize some of them. They look enough like them, but they didn't. They once again, they weren't looking for exact historical accuracy. So this is a musical fantasy. It is a Broadway musical. It tells the story in a very fast paced, but understandable way. Longtime fans like myself, yeah, there's some moments there where you go, why did they change that? Or that didn't happen. And I had to try to step away from being a 40-year fan to fully grasp it. And I can't wait to see the movie again, because a lot of times my head was stuck in there. I'll admit that. I was kind of battling with this kind of storytelling. But ultimately, I was won over by the fact that it is an exciting and challenging way to present this story. So longtime fans out there, yeah, you may have some problems, but don't let that cloud your judgment. Buy into the way they're telling the story as opposed to rebelling against it. Now, I really care about Elton's legacy. I'm one of those people. So there are some scenes in here that, as I said, things don't happen exactly the way they happened or at the same time. My fear is that a lot of this will be taken as fact, when it isn't. And I'll give you a little insight. Elton John's name, as I said, is real name is Reginald Dwight. He took his name from a former band member when he was just starting out, a guy named Elton Dean. He took the name Elton. He took the name John from a guy named Long John Baldry, who was also in one of Elton's bands. And at the time, he had a hit song in England. And Elton was in the backing band for Long John Baldry. So Long John Baldry, sadly, does not get portrayed in this film. He did play an important role in Elton's life early on. He not only helped Elton musically, but he was a homosexual, and he sort of tried to tell Elton in his mixed up mind of his sexuality. You know, Elton was, and it is portrayed in the film, he was engaged to get married when he was like 21 or 20 years old, and he broke it off at the insistence of this guy, Long John Baldry, who said, you know, you can't marry this woman. It's not going to work. You know, you're homosexual. If you hear the song Someone Saved My Life Tonight, and there's the line Sugar Bear, Someone Saved My Life Tonight, Sugar Bear. Sugar Bear is a reference to Long John Baldry. So he played a pivotal role, but he's not shown in the movie, which kind of surprised me and disappointed me. So that's my point, is there's a little moments there. You say, well, why did they change that? But my point is, when they say how he took his name, he took it from Long John Baldry. That's where the John comes from. Elton came from Elton Dean in his band Bluesology, and the John came from Long John Baldry. I'm not going to tell you what they show in the movie, but it's very cool. It's a very neat moment. It's a neat and interesting and really cool connotation, but it isn't true. But once again, they're not going for that. So you have to sort of take some of the artistic license from the reality. But as I said, if you're looking for a movie that makes you feel, that makes you smile, that makes you get emotional, that draws you in, that's entertaining, just as a music fan, I would suggest you go see Rocketman. If you're an Elton John fan, I have to say, we've been waiting so long for this movie to show up, and it has, and it's everything I think that we would want it to be. No, historically, it's not accurate in that way, but in terms of putting Elton's life story out there in an entertaining way, in a way that that moves you, and that in my way validates. You know, like I said, for the casual fan, it will inform and entertain you. For the Elton John fan, it will reward you, and it will touch you. It will reward you and validate you for as to why you've been following this guy for so long, and it will touch you because it is an emotional story, and you've got something invested in this guy, and you see the struggle he went through, and you're happy for him. For the casual fan, what more can you ask for? You're going to be entertained and informed. What more do you want out of a movie? So I think it cuts for both audiences. But I have to say, to Elton John and David Furnish and Dexter Fletcher and Giles Martin and Taron Egerton and everybody involved in this film, all I can say is, job well done. We'll hopefully see. Does Taron Egerton get nominated for an Academy Award? Does he follow in the footsteps of Rami Malek, who portrayed Freddie Mercury in Bohemian Rhapsody? Only time will tell. Will the film get nominated for an Academy Award? Hard to tell. I would think it's going to get nominated for a Golden Globe, which has a separate category for musicals. And I think Taron Egerton may get nominated for a Golden Globe. But the Academy Awards have a higher and a different level of you know, what they look for. But certainly the film is getting rave reviews. I'm excited to see it again and again and again. I think I might even go on opening day and just get there for the first showing and see if I could watch it until the last showing and just hang around and just see the three or four showings of the film a day. I might just do that. Not that I'm obsessed or anything. But what's good about this movie, I think, is that it's got legs. I think this movie is going to be a good movie now to be something that you can enjoy as a new film. And I think it's going to play an important role as part of defining and standing as a part of his legacy as he is 72 and his career and life begin to go to another phase. It's a good time for this movie, and it's a good part of his legacy. So how long will Elton John's music, how long will Elton John's legacy, how long will the film Rocket Man be around? I don't know. I think it's going to be a long, long time. And so, another podcast, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, comes to an end. Thank you for listening. Hope you had a good time. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. This is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screens.